Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
You're in the clubhouse with Jack Daniels Football Friday.
Sports Radio FNZ presents Jack Daniels Football Fridays. We get you ready for all of your weekend college and NFL football. Pick up some of your favorite Jack Daniels and root for your favorite teams. Kyle Bailey, Evan Smoke, Ludwig back with you on this Friday. And coming up in about 30 minutes, we will have live, right around 12:30, we will carry live the LaMelo Ball introductory press conference live from the Spectrum Center. Chris McClain, our very own Mac, is up there covering it live, but LaMelo Ball will be introduced as a brand new Charlotte Hornet, and we will have that for you coming up in about 30 minutes. Also, coming up here in a few minutes, directly after you hear our next interview here, we got some breaking news that is Hornets related, and I will bring that to you. I'm going to do a little bit of digging here, but first, earlier in the show, the head coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, national champ, three-time coach of the year, and one of six active coaches already inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, John Calipari, joined me this morning, and we talked about a lot. But the first thing we got into is my question to him about what kind of player Hornets fans are getting in big man Nick Richards.
Well, first of all, you have a big guy. Big guys develop later. They just do. Nick has come so fast in a small period of time. It's amazing to me. And he was here 3 years. And someone would say, well, that's a long time to be here. Well, Emmanuel quickly was here too. PJ was too. We've had 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year guys here that have gone on to make it. So it doesn't matter that. It's, all right, what happened to him? While he was here, one, he has become one of the best shooting big men you'll see. They talk about his athleticism. In pick and roll, he will be a great rim runner. In other words, you can throw it above the square and he's going to get it. The second thing is he can really shoot. The NBA game has gone to lane touches. And the only way you get lane touches, if you have spacing on the court. And the only way you can have spacing on the court, if people can make shots. He can make shots. Now you have a 7-footer who can make jump shots too. How many back to the basket plays did you see in the bubble where a guy was throwing the ball on a block?
Not many.
No. So he can do that. He has a terrific jump hook. The game's not there anymore. The game is more lane touches, spacing, principled randomness. That's how the game is. That's how it's being played. He fits all that. I'll just give you one quick story. He didn't start playing basketball until he was 14. Came from Jamaica and all the things that you've heard. So his first year, he was good, but he struggled some, and he was on some good teams and against physical guys that he was growing physically into. But his last meeting where he came in, he looks and he says, "You believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. Coach, I love you for that." Wow. Now think about that when you're a coach. Think about that. That's the kind of person you have. And let me say this. All these draft picks, they're futures bets. That's what they are. They're not there now. You're betting where they're going to be in 4 to 5 years. You got PJ. People saw the signs, and then they're watching, and they're seeing the growth. Well, that's why they looked at him. When they saw, and they called me and said, "Where do you think he's going?" And I told them, "You look at even Nick, you say, where could he be in 4 years? Where's the league going to be in 4 years? How are they going to be playing?" You know, you know, I just think they got a guy at that pick, which was like, I thought he was going to go 28-29 to 32-34, and stuff happens. Teams traded. Teams that I thought were going to take them traded their pick. I hit Buzz during the draft, and I said, I think he's going to fall on your lap. The two teams, I did. I texted him. He didn't text me back, but I texted him, and I said that to him.
Well, they were aggressive in going to get him, John. And we got John Calipari, head coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, with us on the Technicom hotline. Coach, talk some more about PJ, if you would, because, you know, yesterday I had Matt Daugherty in studio, and it was about a year ago that I was with Coach Daugherty and Muggsy Bogues and a few others. But those two last year were the only two in my ear saying, Kyle, I think PJ Washington's the right pick for the Hornets, you know, last year in the draft. And I liked PJ, and I watched what you did with him and the development, and the injury happened, and that was unfortunate. And then he gets here, and you start to see early on that he fits. He's an understated kid. He's all about the work, and he goes out on opening night against the Bulls, and I think scored 27 points, a huge debut. He ends up All-NBA rookie second team. Just a great rookie campaign for him. What did you see in his rookie year that I guess, further encouraged you about his pro potential, but also maybe anything that surprised you in year one?
Well, here's the one thing. You know, people say, what is it with your guys that go in the league? And you're seeing Bam and you're seeing Tyler Hero, guys that were, you know, what is it? Well, they learn to fight and they learn to compete, and nothing is given. It's all earned here. You're not promised this and, well, you two are going to shoot all the balls. Well, then that guy goes to your team and he expects to shoot all the balls. I mean, this kid goes, improved his shooting, was way more consistent, understood. Like here, like right now, I'm looking out into our gym, and we have three guys doing a morning workout. We practice later. This is real here. I can't do the work for you. This is a stage. This is about developing professional habits. That's what PJ did here. Then the other side of it is, you take on the role this team needs for you to win. This team, Kentucky. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be a volume shooter in the NBA, but to be a volume shooter here, it means no one else gets to shoot. Well, we get six guys trying to be drafted. Six guys on last year's team. Three were drafted, and two signed two ways, and one signed Exhibit 10. So they were all signed by NBA teams. Everybody's trying to eat. It doesn't mean you can't be a volume shooter in the NBA. I think we have about 10 or 12 volume shooters in the NBA, which is out of 30 is a pretty big number. But they weren't volume shooters here. And PJ learned, I'm going to fight. How do I play to win when I'm not going good offensively? You'll see him come up with balls. He's a physical man, which means he was ready to walk in the NBA and do what he did because he was physically and mentally ready to go. But I'm proud of him. He came in, his father, and he came in about 3 weeks ago. I got to see him. He looks great. He's excited. He wants to win. It's one of the things he said, Coach, I just want to win. I mean, for the fans down in Charlotte to know that you got a guy in the team that, yeah, he played well. Yeah, he was second-team all-rookie, and that's a big deal. At his age, he's one of the younger guys, but he wants to win. He wants, let's get this team together and let's win.
He plays like it. We got John Calipari, head coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, with us on the Technicom hotline. Coach, a couple quick things. I'll let you get back to your workday here. I've heard you talk about this in the past. Lots of people, whether it's sports or business, say this. You know, progress isn't always linear. And I think that's a phrase that applies to Malik Monk especially. Mitch Kupchak, in the conversations I've had with him, has continued to insist to me and to others that Malik, you know, is still the most talented player on their roster. And for the final 15 games leading up to that unfortunate suspension, he finally looked like it clicked and he was starting to play like it. What's the ceiling now for Malik Monk? What do you expect from him going into another season?
Let me just say, his spirit is unbelievable. He's the one guy I had here that I could tell you that the game was easy for him. Even practice was easy for him. And I think, again, I wish I would have done more to make it harder for him, which I've done with most of the guys. But he was so talented. I can't begin to tell you. He had 47 in a nationally televised game where I was saying no, and he shot it. I said, yes. And he's one of those guys that, you know, sometimes you got to have some down time to bounce through stuff. And for him, I think, again, maybe he thought this was all going to be easy and I wouldn't have to have the greatest habits off the court and I could do this, that, and the other and still be professional. Well, you can't. And aren't you happy he learned it at a young age?
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I got to give it to Mitch. Mitch knows basketball. Mitch knows talent. And Mitch looks at him and says, look, Malik is the most talented. He got to get his stuff together. And you know what? I watch players when I evaluate. I want to know when everything's going wrong, how do they play and how do they act then? Who do they become? Because going through that really makes you that hardened player you have to be to win. And again, I think he's a guy that scoring in bursts, can defend because of his quickness and his, you know, he just reacts naturally to stuff. But I'll say it again. He's the one of the few players here where everything was pretty easy for him. Because even as hard as I make it, it wasn't for him. And so now it's gotten hard. And you know what? I think what you're going to do is he's another one. He's the one that's, you know, he could be that guy, that comeback guy. That could be him.
John, there's so many more questions I could ask you, but I appreciate you doing this. And folks out there don't know, but you agreed to do this on short notice and take some time out of your day. So, Coach, I appreciate it. Best of luck, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
There you go. John Calipari, head coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, three-time National Coach of the Year, and one of six active coaches already enshrined in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame this morning with some thoughts on Nick Richards and the things that he said about Nick Richards and the evolution of basketball, the NBA game especially, the way it's already changed, what it might look like in 4 or 5 years. He's right. And Nick Richards presents, as he put it, with all these guys, you know, a futures bet, you know, a gamble, a calculated, educated one at that, but still a futures bet. And Mitch Kupchak and James Borrego are, you know, betting, rolling the dice and kind of putting their money or their draft capital where their mouths are in the form of a second round future pick to take Nick Richards this year in the hopes they can turn him into a special NBA talent. And it's 6'11", 7 feet tall with that kind of, as Mitch Kupchak told me yesterday, ridiculous athleticism. There's a lot to build on. Now, we got the LaMelo Ball press conference coming up here live on Sports Radio FNZ in about 20 minutes. We will bring that to you live as it airs, live from the Spectrum Center, so make sure to stick around for that. But before we step aside, some interesting news in the NBA trade rumors and a couple of things that stand out here could potentially involve the Charlotte Hornets. The first thing I want to throw out there, this came from Legion Hoops. And Legion Hoops, about 500,000 followers on Twitter. They get it right more than they get it wrong, based on everything I can tell. But this is not a guarantee of a deal so much as the indication that one has been discussed and maybe still is. Legion Hoops reporting just a little while ago that the Los Angeles Clippers have discussed a potential trade for Hornets guard Terry Rozier. And that's actually, I take that back, that's according to Chris Mannix. That's my mistake. Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix, the first to report that. And as I pull it up here, he's talking about the Clippers, whether or not they'll run it back. And in this caption, you know, he mentions that they've got some key free agents and big decisions to make on Montrezl Harrell and Marcus Morris and a few others. And that they've already tinkered with the roster, flipping Landry Shamet as part of a package that brought back Luke Kennard. But they need another guard. They need another player in the backcourt. And Chris Mannix mentions Rajon Rondo first and then says, quote, L.A. has also explored a deal for Charlotte's Terry Rozier per source, end quote. That's the extent of the information we have right now on a potential Terry Rozier to the Clippers trade. But that's not the only thing. Also, we have this time it is Legion Hoops and Ross from Legion Hoops reporting, quote, sources, the Mavericks and Hornets have discussed a trade that would send DeLon Wright to Charlotte. No deal is imminent, end quote. So Rozier to the Clippers is being reported by Mannix as a possibility, and Legion Hoops reporting that the Mavericks and Hornets have discussed a trade that would send 28-year-old DeLon Wright to the Hornets. No other details right now as to potential compensation. That would go back to Dallas for a deal like that. You know, but DeLon Wright is, by the way, he was part of that trade deal back in 2000. I guess it was 2019, 18. It was the deal that sent Mark Gasol to the Raptors. I know that. It was the deal that included C.J. Miles and Jonas Valanciunas.
That'd be 2019.
Right. It was the deal that sent Mark Gasol to the Toronto Raptors. DeLon Wright was a part of that, and he spent the rest of that season in Memphis before signing, or I think being dealt to the Dallas Mavericks, where he is currently. But there is, at least reportedly, according to Ross from Legion Hoops, a deal being discussed between Dallas and Charlotte that would send DeLon Wright to the Hornets. Now, beyond that, we don't have much information. Should I be able to find it, I will certainly pass it along, but that's something to keep an eye on, and it underscores what I said yesterday and all that draft reaction. This roster's not a finished product yet. They start the season, I mean, it's quick now. We're a month away from the start of the NBA season, so there's not much time. But there's a compacted free agency, a compacted period here to make some moves and try to build the roster out a little bit differently. And Mitch Kupchak said yesterday when I talked to him that yesterday they were even working on some possible things. Couldn't tell us what, but they're active right now. They're active. We'll come back. You'll hear a bit more of what Mitch Kupchak had to say, and we'll get you ready for the LaMelo Ball introductory press conference coming up in 17 minutes. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
You're in the clubhouse with Jack Daniels Football Friday.
Sports Radio FNZ.
The NFL plays here exclusively every Monday, Thursday, and Sunday nights.
The benches will empty.
We are Charlotte.
Sports Radio FNZ.
To me, what the league is nowadays is playmakers. At the guard spot, at the wing spot, guys that can make plays for others, make, you know, the right play. And he makes it look effortless. I mean, he's a hell of a talent. I'm thrilled to have him. And I think he fits our style of play. So we couldn't be happier. I think it's a heck of a pick for our franchise, for our organization, for our city. And I couldn't be more happy.
That was James Borrego, head coach of your Charlotte Hornets. The draft night, that was actually draft night, reacting, saying LaMelo Ball is a perfect fit to what they want to do with this organization. 704-570-9610. Asa Abloy phone lines. Building Center text line. Find me on Twitter at Kyle Bailey Club. It's at Kyle Bailey, C-L-U-B. You can always hit me at all of those places, you know, with thoughts, with reactions. And as one texter hit me up earlier to remind me, you know, when I get something wrong or when something slips my mind. And I was talking earlier about Greg Olsen last night. 11 and a half minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Seattle and Arizona, Thursday night football. Greg goes down with what appears to be a ruptured fascia in his right foot. And that would, of course, end his season and, in all likelihood, end his NFL career. He signed a one-year, $7 million contract with the Seattle Seahawks back in February and or July, I should say. But then also this summer, Greg, as it escaped me earlier, we knew he was bound and destined for a television booth next season or in the not-too-distant future. He's already been doing TV. Smoke, it slipped my mind that Greg Olsen's already signed that deal with Fox. He was doing XFL football this spring. And so I mean, it just escaped me for that time, but he's already inked his deal with Fox, so it's just waiting for him.
Well, don't blame me because you don't watch the XFL. You hater.
No, the only time I did watch the XFL was the time that Greg was doing it. That was all. So I at least watched that. I learned a thing or two that day about the D.C. Defenders and whatever that New York team was called. So, yeah, no, Greg has his deal in place with Fox, and whoever that texter is who hit me up to remind me of that, I definitely appreciate it. So you heard in the previous segment, John Calipari had a lot to say about Nick Richards, the new Hornet, a couple of existing Hornets in P.J. Washington and Malik Monk. The entirety of that interview will be up at WFNZ.com here shortly, and you can always listen to it via the Rewind feature on the Radio.com app. We cut that conversation a little bit short for the replay, but for the Kentucky fans out there, you know, who wanted to hear Coach Cal at least talk a bit about his team, we touched on that toward the end. You can hear the extended interview on the Radio.com app and WFNZ.com. He talked a lot about how loaded his roster is going into this college basketball season, Olivier Saar, the Wake Forest transfer, what that does, you know, to not just enhance the talent on his roster, but how long and tall and deep they are. You know, talked about just the overwhelming impulse and urge to play a lot of zone defense, given the length and the size that they have. And so, yeah, that was part of that conversation, too, if you want to check it out. Now, we are told that we are about 10 minutes away from the LaMelo Ball press conference over at the Spectrum Center. We are awaiting the start of that, and as soon as we are able to, we will join that press conference live, as you can hear LaMelo Ball being introduced by the Hornets third overall draft pick, brand new member of the organization. But as we wait and as we continue to discuss and react to the big moments of the week, that, of course, is headlined by the NBA draft. And James Borrego right there on Wednesday night after the draft talking about the fit of LaMelo Ball in his system in this organization. And James Borrego on Sports Radio FNZ yesterday talked a bit more about LaMelo and how excited he is about his potential.
I'm excited about the potential here. There's a high ceiling. There's a lot of talent, playmaking, but it's going to be up to him how he works, how he develops. Those are things I'm going to have to see over the next couple of weeks, next couple of months. If he is who I think he is, and he has the work ethic, he has the pride, the competitive spirit. I don't know what he could look like. I mean, we could be looking at an extremely special player. That's why we drafted him. So I can't wait to get my hands on him, work with him, develop him, you know, give him our game plan, and then watch him grow and develop over the next couple years.
There you go. James Borrego yesterday afternoon here on Sports Radio FNZ. And, you know, it's not me letting the cat out of the bag because I heard Mac bring it up toward the tail end of their show this morning. They had been hoping he and T-Bone to be joined by LaMelo Ball sometime in the last 2 days. Didn't quite work out that way. You will hear, though, the conversation that they recorded with LaMelo Ball just a little while ago. And not to spoil it, but Mac walked in the studio a while ago and said, you know, what you were talking about yesterday and 2 days ago about him being a much more likable and humble kid than some people realized. He said, I heard it. I saw it. You know, as Mac and Bone were talking to LaMelo Ball a little while ago, and you'll hear that conversation coming up on Monday morning. So we're going to hear from LaMelo here in about 10 minutes. And specifically as it pertains to his game, the strengths and the weaknesses, the holes in it, the things that people talk about, certainly on the negative side as to what needs to be fixed and why some even think he might not be very good, is the jump shot. You know, and how the jumper has been criticized and dissected. We talked about this with Matt Daugherty yesterday. I also talked to Mitch Kupchak about this yesterday and said, you know, what's the concern around LaMelo Ball's jump shot?
Yes, that was a concern. Last week in Los Angeles, they did have a workout where we went to, and they also invited Golden State, and I think Detroit was there too. And it was just a 1-on-0 workout. But for me, you know, I needed to be convinced, you know, that he could at minimum make open shots. So he can make open shots. He shot the ball for an hour, and the ball, you know, it's not the prettiest thing. His left hand, you know, his left elbow, like you said, goes out a little bit. But when the ball leaves his hand, it leaves his hand, you know, as it should, and he has great rotation, and he shoots the ball the same way every time. So I don't think that we would look to correct, you know, his shot. I think he's going to be able to make open shots. Whether he can put it down and pull up, you know, I don't know if he can do that, and I don't know if that's necessary for him to be successful.
There you go. That's Mitch Kupchak on the jump shot yesterday, something that of all the things that I would be quote-unquote concerned about with LaMelo Ball, I'm not nearly as concerned about the jump shot as some people are. I don't think there's anything mechanically that is too drastically wrong with his jump shot that can't be fixed and corrected. It's not as bad as Lonzo's. You know, we're not talking about, you know, funky jump shots, MKG, Sean Marion, AC Green. I mean, you pick your funky jump shots throughout history. We're not talking about that. You know, we're talking about a guy whose release point probably needs to be a little bit higher. His release is pretty quick already. I mean, some slight tweaks and adjustments to that jump shot, and you would expect a big step forward. You know, for a guy who, if he commits himself, can absolutely do that. And the frame's there, man. 6'7", 6'10", wingspan. You know, it's about the ability to, first of all, he's as close to truly ambidextrous as you'll find in a basketball player. I mean, you watch this kid rifling one-handed baseball passes with both of his hands 20, 25, 30 feet down the floor with pinpoint accuracy. There's an elite aspect of his game that is court vision, distribution. He just has eyes in the back of his head. You got to round out the rest of the game. And at 19 years old, he's got plenty of time to do that. And that is also the case, at least they hope, with Nick Richards, the young man out of Kentucky, who is the primary reason that I wanted to talk to Coach Calipari this morning in the show. Also PJ and Malik and, you know, a few other things. But talk about Nick Richardson, because as excited as I am about the Vernon Carey pick and what they did at 32 to possibly make this team even better, they did the same or a similar sort of thing with this Nick Richardson trade where the Pelicans took the 7-footer out of Kentucky 42nd overall and the Hornets made a deal to go get him for a second round pick in 2024. Here's Mitch Kupchak yesterday on what they think they're getting in Nick Richards.
Incredibly, ridiculously athletic. You know, runs the floor like a deer. and can really get off the ground. He started playing the game late. He's from Jamaica, and he did not play basketball growing up. So he started playing 14 or 15. So I would put him into the late bloomer category. Great kid. You know, we did see him work out 2 weeks ago also. You know, and he could actually shoot the ball a little bit. I mean, shooting it in an open gym and then shooting it, you know, in a game in the NBA is a little bit different, but his form is good enough. And it may take a year or two, you know, for him, you know, to find, say, for us to figure out where he actually is. But he's a big kid and really athletic, and I think he's going to work hard.
Didn't start playing basketball until he was 14, 15 years old. I think Mitch said 15. John Calipari told me 14 this morning. Either way, I mean, this is not a guy who's been at it since he was 7, 8, 9 years old. He's raw, man, but he's really raw athletically, too. He's special, gifted athletically at 7 feet tall, 6'11". He's got it all from an athletic standpoint. Now, all that said, we told you a couple of minutes back, in addition to all this draft reaction, there are more trade rumors floating out there. Chris Mannix of SI saying that the Clippers have real interest in dealing for Terry Rozier. Legion Hoops reporting that the Hornets and Mavericks have been discussing a possible deal that would send DeLon Wright to the Charlotte Hornets. All of this is going to happen quickly because it's compacted. All this is going to happen in a much shorter window than normal. And Mitch Kupchak also talked with me yesterday about how they're not quite sure what to expect going into this short, compacted free agency period.
We don't know, okay? It's, you know, a period where, you know, it's very competitive with the teams. You know, fortunately, we're one of four or five teams that do have cap room, so we have the ability to go out and, you know, pay a player more than anybody else. But, you know, we don't want to make a mistake and pay the wrong player, you know, or overpay a player. So, you know, yes, we've targeted some players, and even today we're trying to get some stuff done. You know, we can't sign players. We can talk to teams about trades, and then the free agent period starts, you know, in about a day or so, and then we're allowed to actually talk to free agents. But, you know, right now we could look to sign our rookies that we drafted last night and look to make trades. So the free agent period is coming. We're working on it. We're preparing. And I can't tell you what's going to happen because I don't know.
There you go. Mitch Kupchak yesterday here in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ. He joined me and special guest Coach Matt Daugherty yesterday, who had some really good insight to offer on what the Hornets just did the past couple of days. Here's the update, right? We've been planning to bring to you the LaMelo Ball introductory press conference. We are awaiting word as to when or if that's going to start on time, how that's going to happen. Sounds like there could be some last-minute adjustments. We will continue to stay nimble, and whenever we can, if we can, we will air that press conference live. If not, we've got a lot of things to talk about, you know, both on the Hornets and Panthers side, but there's another big weekend of college football ahead, and we haven't had too much time today to talk a lot about that, and I do want to get into it. The only thing we've talked about college football-related so far today is Nick Saban's comments about how he thinks defense is dying in college football. And that's not a, I don't think that's hyperbolic. The exact quote was he thinks the days of, you know, winning with great defense are probably behind him in college football. And first of all, it's jarring to hear that from Nick Saban, a man who has built his legacy as arguably the greatest college football coach of all time on the back of dominant defenses. Now, not as of late, you know, but the first basically four national championships that Nick Saban won at Alabama, you know, were buoyed by dominant defenses. But the last couple of years, now with Mac Jones, before that Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts a bit before that, I mean, they had started to really open things up offensively, run a much more wide-open offensive scheme. Lane Kiffin was there. Steve Sarkisian was there. They were doing things differently. Alabama football had migrated into the 21st century offensively, and that appears that moving forward, that's still how they're going to make their hay. And you can't blame him. So I say that to say the writing's kind of been on the wall in college football, especially about how where things have gone with the offense, the game skewing way more heavily toward offense than it ever has. And that's been the case at Alabama for a couple of years, but you can almost hear the sadness in Nick Saban's voice with him coming to the harsh conclusion that he's just probably going to have to outscore everybody the rest of the way, Smoke. I don't think he's too torn up about that, but being the old school guy that he is, I'm sure he doesn't love that defense doesn't play as big a factor as it used to.
Basically, he's like saying is, all right, gloves are off. Two could play at this game. I'm putting 100 on all your guys.
Oh, man. Nick Saban, I guess no matter how you feel about him, he is a national treasure, and at the very least, the greatest college football coach of all time. I think he passed Bear Bryant a couple of years ago. All right, we'll come back. We're staying nimble. we may or may not have a LaMelo Ball introductory press conference to bring to you, but either way, we got takes. We got takes, and I'll tell you who else had takes. Jonathan Givony and Zach Lowe on an ESPN NBA podcast yesterday with some information as to what the Hornets nearly did on draft night. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
You're in the clubhouse with Jack Daniels Football Friday.
Sports Radio FNZ.
The ACC plays here.
There's nobody home. Touchdown.
We are Charlotte.
Sports Radio FNZ. You're in the clubhouse with Jack Daniels Football Friday.
Listen to Sports Radio FNZ on your smart speaker. Just ask it to play Sports Radio WFNZ, powered by Dell Technologies. Call 877-ASK-DELL. Kyle Bailey, Evan Smoke, Ludwig with you on this Jack Daniels Football Friday. If we're able to here momentarily, we will bring you the LaMelo Ball press conference. If not, well, we'll talk over it and analyze it in real time. Something like that. Coming up in about 20 minutes, John Ellis of One Panther Place, the supreme content creator at One Panther Place. He'll join us as he does each Friday for a full, extensive breakdown slash preview of the Panthers and Lions on Sunday at Bank of America Stadium. And I'm going to pull up the latest from Vegas Insider to see if there's been any recent line movement. But at this moment in time, or at least last I checked, it was still holding pat with the Panthers anywhere from a 1.5 to a 2-point favorite. Meaning that the obligatory 3-point advantage you get for being the home team has been eaten into a little bit. So it's essentially a pick'em game on a neutral site. If you look at it that way, the home team gets a built-in 3-point advantage, and then you go from there. But the Panthers are a narrow favorite in this game on Sunday. I think they should be, but that's entirely still at this point dependent upon whether or not Teddy Bridgewater can go this Sunday. And looking at it now, well, I'm glad I checked. I'm glad I checked. Look at this, Smoke. I don't know if the Vegas Sharps know something that we don't quite know officially yet, but this line has now swung all the way over to Lions, favored by 2.5 across multiple sports books. That line change has been pretty dramatic. 4 points in some places in the last 12 to 24 hours. The Lions are now a 2-point favorite, 2.5 on some books. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, no Teddy Bridgewater, no Christian McCaffrey. Defense is banged up even more. Say what you will about Dante Jackson, but he's been better this year when he's healthy, but he's not healthy, and you're relying on Troy Pride, and you're going against Matt Stafford. I would agree with that as well.
Okay, there you go. So we'll keep you posted on the press conference. Sorry, I got my distraction. My attention was diverted there for a second because there's some activity going on that is LaMelo Ball related. But yeah, back to that. I get it. And I look at that, and that to me is indicative of somebody out there having some information as to the status of Teddy Bridgewater Sunday. Otherwise, I have a hard time explaining away a 4-point line swing. I mean, Detroit's not that good. They're not terrible, but they're not that good. They're 4-5, and they've got an injured Matt Stafford coming into Charlotte on Sunday. He's going to play with a partially torn ligament in his throwing hand on Sunday, assuming he goes. Now, he was probably playing coy a little bit in talking with the media yesterday up in Detroit because he said he's unsure if he's going to be out there on Sunday. And so I don't. That's the game that I think was it Jason Lockenfora yesterday who nearly laughed me off the air when I asked him to pick that game because he said he wouldn't touch this game with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, and plus the Lions are an unpredictable team as well. But they're in a more desperate situation than I think Carolina is in because no one's job's in jeopardy, I don't think, coaching-wise, at least, for Carolina. Detroit, on the other hand, everything's on the line for Matt Patricia and for Matt Stafford, too.
Yeah, there's no question. We got texters writing in, Building Center text line. Stanford P is saying, Vegas is taking into account Teddy isn't playing, CMC isn't playing, and the second half must be played. Yeah, there's some truth to that. I know. There's been no official indication that Teddy Bridgewater can't go on Sunday, but he has been limited in practice the last 2 days. I've not seen anything within the hour that indicates a big difference there. Joe Person did take a deep dive look at both Will Grier and PJ Walker in his latest column over at The Athletic. That is an interesting question. Like if you assume for a second, let's talk about this under the working assumption that Teddy Bridgewater is held out of Sunday's game, something that, according to Matt Rhule himself, will not be announced in all likelihood until Saturday or even Sunday morning. If Teddy Bridgewater can't go, and Panthers fans, this is where I want to hear from you because I'm fascinated by this, and maybe it's a reflection of the times that I'm this interested in what you know about the backup quarterbacks or what you think about the backup quarterbacks on a 3-7 football team. But if Teddy Bridgewater can't go, what benefits the Panthers the most? What makes the most sense? To start P.J. Walker, you know, and find out what he's got, and to see if maybe he can recreate some of that XFL magic with the Panthers? Or do you feel an obligation, so to speak, to play Will Greer, a third-round draft pick just last spring, to play the third-rounder, the local kid, and give him a chance to see what he has to offer? At the very least, maybe, to put him out there and put some game tape that's available for other teams to maybe work up a deal. There are a lot of possibilities there. Smoke, if you had to make the call on Sunday, if it's not Teddy and it has to be P.J. Walker or Will Greer, where would you go?
I'd probably go P.J., but I wouldn't have him on as big of a leash. You know, eventually you're going to have to get to Will Greer. I feel like it's weird, though, because half the time P.J.'s the backup and then the other half of the time Will's the backup. So I can't really tell. You know, I wouldn't be shocked, heck, if Teddy doesn't play. We've seen it already happen, rotating quarterbacks.
Well, I was going to say, the thing that needs to be considered, too, is that there's a decent chance that, you know, we'll see both. Unless one of the guys goes out there, whoever's starting that game, you know, unless P.J. Walker goes out there on Sunday and is setting the world on fire, you know, and playing well, and they're in they have a lead, and, you know, he's operating well, he's in a rhythm, you wouldn't expect him to get yanked from the game. But if he's struggling or, you know, up and down, then, yeah, you'd probably expect to see both of those guys Sunday because you'd have to dress them both if Teddy can't be out there. So there's a good chance you'd see both. I'm intrigued by P.J. Walker. You know, and if you posed that same question to me, I would probably hedge and say, let's see both of them. But if I had to pick one, I would probably say Will Greer because you spent a third-round draft pick on him. Because I still believe he has ability, and I believe he has talent. The kid can spin it. I know it was in the college game, but, you know, West Virginia and for a short while at Florida, Will Greer looked like the real deal. And now that he's no longer in North Turner's offense and we haven't seen him turn loose in Joe Brady's offense on a Sunday, I want to see it, A, and B, I want to know. You have to know what you have in terms of getting rid of him, cutting ties, maybe working a deal, trying to get some draft picks or a draft pick in exchange for him possibly. Marty did just turn Kyle Allen into a fifth rounder, so there's no reason why he couldn't conceivably do the same thing with Will Greer if they throw him out there on Sunday and you put some good film out there for opposing coaches and organizations to see going into the offseason. So, yeah, I want to see both, but if I had to pick one, I would probably say Will Greer just out of curiosity's sake and for the sake of, you know, the process and being thorough in the organization and roster building. But just from a pure entertainment standpoint, I think I'd rather see P.J. Walker. You know, and shout out to our buddy Julian Council, who has coined the phrase, let P.J. cook. Let P.J. cook if there's an opportunity. You know, if Teddy's not playing, if it's a blowout situation, if Will Greer doesn't play well in the first half or, hell, even the first quarter, let's see what P.J. Walker has. Because, you know, P.J., I know the story goes that when he was with the Indianapolis Colts, you know, when Andrew Luck was still there, he didn't end up making the roster in Indianapolis, but the story goes that Andrew Luck told his father, Oliver Luck, who would become the XFL commissioner, hey, this is a guy that somebody needs to sign to pick up. He can play. You know, he got the Andrew Luck seal of approval, so to speak. But he didn't hang on to the roster. And he went to the XFL, and he burned it up. And he set the world on fire. But it was the XFL. And in what limited snaps we've seen him so far this year, I don't think we've seen nearly enough to know what he is at this level. Do you think long-term, well, let's just say intermediate term, Smoke, that ends up being more of a culture play, you know, a get Matt Rhule's guys in here in year one to lay the foundation and establish the culture, and, you know, we don't see P.J. Walker maybe even in the next season. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that could be a possibility. I think that's been a possibility for most of the signings that they got from Temple and Baylor. I mean, well, Tahir Whitehead ain't going to be here past this year, and most of the Temple and Baylor guys aren't playing. I mean, Robbie, or starting at least. Robbie is a starter, and he's proven to be a number one receiver for this team. And Tahir Whitehead's a starter, but his playing time has reduced for the most part. Then you have other guys like Sam Franklin, who are basically depth pieces. Unfortunately, Keith Kirkwood could not stay healthy, and he's out for the year. But most of the guys we've seen that we were saying, oh, Temple, Baylor, it's all those guys, they have not been on the field that much.
No, they haven't. You're right. They haven't seen it. Now, we've seen Robbie. Robbie's been worth his weight in gold. You know, we've seen Tahir Whitehead. Quite frankly, we've probably seen enough of Tahir Whitehead. So we've seen a couple of these guys. You know, Sam Franklin, who I think has probably earned himself a roster spot, you know, at least for now going into next year. There's no guarantee that, you know, he makes it out of a training camp, but I think he's earned himself – you know, a callback for the Panthers roster next season going into 2021. But you're right about that. They brought some guys in to lay the foundation, to establish a culture, but it's not as if you expect several of those guys to be long-term core components of what they hope to build. Texters writing in, building center text line. One guy saying, start Greer, then shop him. They said Marty turned Kyle Allen into Jeremy Chinn. Imagine what he could do with Jesus Greer in a trade. I can only assume that's the beard and the long hair. Somebody else voting in saying, let's go PJ. Another texter saying, if it isn't Will Greer, Marty needs to go for wasting a third-round pick. Someone saying, is Jeremy Chinn playing? If not, who's stopping either their stud young tight end, TJ or Swift, in the passing game? That's Nick from Belmont. I've seen nothing indicating that Jeremy Chinn won't go Sunday. Have you seen anything, Smoke? It sounds to me like Jeremy Chinn's a full go.
No, he's been off the injury reports for the whole week, so I think that was more of a last week thing. But, he looks like he'll be good to go.
Yeah, he does. And so we got more texters writing in saying, I think they'll go Greer because they said PJ is the emergency running back. With Mike Davis hobbled, I don't think they'll start PJ. Do you have the third person, first person, the Mike Davis bit? Kind of sounded like the what's the routine? Abbott and Costello or whoever it was. It was a third person, first person. Mike Davis talking about himself in an interview yesterday, you know, being asked about his injury and where everything stands. If you got it, let me know. If not, I can pretty well describe it. Mike Davis was having some fun, you know, with the media this morning or yesterday, rather, you know, and was asked about his hand. You got it? This is it. This is Mike Davis asked by the media yesterday about his hand injury.
Hey, Mike, wondered if we can see your thumb. And whether you've kept up with Matt Stafford's thumb this week.
I mean, I would love for Mike Davis to show you his thumb, but I don't know if Mike Davis is here to show you his thumb, though. But I'm telling you, Mike Davis' thumb is fine. I don't know what happened with Matthew Stafford's thumb, though. But I think Mike Davis' thumb is he'll be good to go.
Yeah, Mike, why is Mike Davis talking in first person?
Is it first or third?
Now I'm confused.
Is Mike Davis talking in first or third? It's third person, right? Yeah, I don't know. Mike Davis, you know, I don't know, man. I just think Mike Davis is ready to go.
Had them all confused. Third, first, is Mike Davis talking in first or third? It's third. It is, in fact, third. David Newton was confused right there. I still have texts coming in on the Building Center text line. One guy saying it's a no-brainer. You should start Will Greer on Sunday. We have to see if he's a bust or not, even if PJ's the better option. That's from George. Well, George, Matt Rhule was asked yesterday if there's any pressure or if he feels any pressure to start Will Greer on Sunday if Teddy can't go because he was a third-round pick last year.
To me, where people were drafted or selected, that affecting your decision-making is what ruins organizations. You owe it to the team and the players to play the guys who practice the best and play the best. And if you've drafted right, then they'll be out there. And so Will has deserved to have a chance to play. It just hasn't timed out right for him. He's practiced really well and prepared really well. You know, we could go the whole year with Will not getting in the game, and I would know exactly what we have with him because I see it day in and day out. So I have no doubt about what he can do. He just has to go out and do it right when the time comes. But to me, you know, I think the minute the guys in the locker room say, well, he's playing this guy because, you know, he was drafted, or, you know, if he's playing this guy because he has history with him, you know, if that's true, I mean, people can think those things, but if that's true, you know, you erode the competitive aspect of the team. And so I try to go off of what I see, and I try to go off the tape, and I try to go off the practice and the meetings and that's in every position. And if that means that we start an undrafted rookie, then we do. If it means that we start a veteran player, then we do. I think if you do that long enough and over the years, people will understand that, you know, we want to be a competition-based place. And so the guys who practice and play the best, go.
There you go. Matt Rhule on whether or not he's feeling any pressure to start Will Greer on Sunday against the Lions if Teddy Bridgewater can't go because they spent a third-round draft pick on Greer last year. And look, I don't think that if this doesn't work out, that there's not a way to salvage it. Again, as one texter pointed out, and I brought it up earlier as well, you know, they took Kyle Allen, and because it was an emergency situation last year, he wasn't expected to play much, if at all, but had to, and they turned that into a fifth-round draft pick. So, you know, swapping a third for a fifth, you know, wouldn't exactly be a win, but you'd be mitigating a lot of your loss if you could at least flip him for something going into this offseason. All right, as we step aside here, unfortunately, it looks like we will not be able to bring you live the LaMelo Ball press conference here this afternoon, live from the Spectrum Center. Some reasons that prohibited that really aren't worth getting into. But we cannot do that for you this afternoon, but that's all right. That's okay. I'm sure you will be hearing a lot about, and even from, LaMelo Ball over the course of the next couple of weeks, and certainly as we're a month out from the start of the NBA season, Mac and T-Bone sat down for a conversation with LaMelo Ball just earlier this afternoon. They will have that first thing on Monday morning, so that's not a bad consolation prize. Here's what we'll do, though. When we come back, we do it every Friday, and this man was kind enough to make a little time for us this morning, make some changes to his schedule. He gets it, though. John Calipari was coming on early, so John Ellis of One Panther Place, he's coming on next, and he'll preview Panthers and Lions. Should they be expected to beat the Lions Sunday? Well, John will tell you next here in the Clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
Here in the Clubhouse with Jack Daniels Football Friday.